Oh, man, it's just me right now. Just me. Javier will be joining us shortly. Stick around. Today, we have Morgan Paxia. We're going to chat last-minute capital markets in 2023. What are the top 10 states to operate cannabis businesses in? We'll talk about that. If you didn't know what it is, off-topic from cannabis, we're going to talk about extreme ironing. That is a sport, and yes, it is what it sounds like. With that said, let's get started. Cannabis Insider, December 12th. Aaron Thomas, get us going. All right, y'all, we have a packed show. We have two other executives joining us as well. One on the ancillary side, an awesome product for consuming cannabis. I'm super excited to show you this one. We're also going to be speaking with a cultivator a little bit later in the show from Michigan, which I'm just going to say it now, takes the top spot for operating a cannabis business. And best top 10 states for cannabis businesses ranked by legal experts. The winner is Michigan. It's Michigan. Javier Haas, get your butt over here and tell me your initial thoughts. Michigan takes the top spot in this list, man.
I love it, man. I think it's a state with great potential. Hit the ground running.
It is. I mean, here. I'll read it.
What happens with Ohio now? Because, you know, it's right next door. Interesting competition.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio has three huge markets, right? Cincinnati, Columbus, Cleveland. It's a great, great state. Keep an eye on Pennsylvania. We'll obviously know if Florida is on the ballot in the next few months. It's going to be a packed 2024 talking about how these markets are evolving. With that said, Javier, we're not going to spend too long with just our beautiful faces on the screen. We have other people who have come to talk with us.
Graphics. Can you see those?
I know. Yeah. We have a new look, new aesthetic. We're going to continue to grow into 2023. If you're listening to this after the fact, which most of you are, you can always take a look at our YouTube, X, and LinkedIn. We always stream this every Tuesday, Thursday at 1. We will be changing up a little bit moving into the new year, so keep an eye on the schedule, but you will still have this in podcast format. So Javi, any headlines you want to touch on before we dive in to people who know almost as much about cannabis as you?
I mean, not really. I was looking at the international markets today, you know, soldiers in Ukraine asking for medical cannabis and actually using medical cannabis for phantom pain. Colombia basically saying, the Colombian president coming out and saying that low-level drug possession of any kind, right, like for personal use, is no longer something that the police should prosecute or pursue in any way, right, in terms of going after consumers. I'd say about that. Maybe, you know, go check out our 2023 list of 23 people that drove the industry forward in 2023 that shaped the cannabis industry. Benzinga.com/cannabis after the show.
One of which is on this show. We're going to be talking to him first, Morgan Paxia. I am stoked to be working with these people moving into next year. And we have more highlights coming out. So keep an eye. Download Benzinga's app. Y'all, it's incredibly useful. You have full industry agnostic news about the economy, about the markets. You can keep in touch with everything. But if you scroll over, you have a whole cannabis news feed. It's endless. Just cannabis articles. It's awesome. And Javi, you write what? Your team writes 10, 20, 30 articles a day sometimes?
Yeah, 20-something, 30.
Yeah, it's incredibly useful. So make sure to keep an eye on it. So, all right, I got to say, I teased this a bit before you were here. Did you know? Actually, no. We're going to do this when Morgan's on. Aaron Thomas, bring Morgan Paxia over, and then I have a question. Morgan, last Tuesday of the year, my friend, for us at least. How you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm just wondering if I'm going to be number 23 of the 23.
No, you were right in the middle.
MJ of the MJ list.
We did. Hey, if you want to be 23... we can make that happen. Javier can go in and reorder. I got to ask, guys, did you know extreme ironing was a sport? And let me explain. It's where people take their ironing boards into extreme places. And it's not only gives you the effect of an extreme sport, but you also have the pleasure and comfort of a freshly pressed shirt. That is an actual thing started in 1997. Fun fact for the day.
So it's like it's like curling is extreme sweeping, and then
yeah. But I mean, this guy, I'm looking at a picture of him strapped to the back of a taxi cab going through Manhattan. It's incredible. Now all that's missing is a joint, right. Or a vape or an edible, whatever you want to do. But Morgan, man, we're here at the end of the year. Give us your sense of how we're ending it. Honestly, I think some optimism, obviously yesterday kind of, you know, sunk that a little bit in the markets, but overall, I feel like it's been a healthy past few weeks.
Oh yeah. No, it's been a great couple of weeks. Unfortunately, I feel like people are expressing a little PTSD for this time last year when Safe, when it was still called Safe, was toast and the reality was sinking in and the stocks just collapsed. You know, there's been a lot of pressure last day, 2 days now, post this DEA news of them going after some of these synthetics. If anyone hasn't seen this yet, the news is on Benzinga Cannabis website, so check it out. This is where I was reading about this, but yeah, so I suspect that's where some of this pressure is coming. I mean, the volume's already starting to die off anyway. It feels like people already phoned it in for the year. So without much bid, and you have a negative news, the algos just, they have a field day with it. So, seems like we're having a little bit of that again. You know, for me, it doesn't really, this doesn't matter. This is, you know, synthetics are not our jam. That's not, we have little to no involvement, right? As an industry, as a legal cannabis industry is focused on organic and so this is, if anything, maybe they're cleaning house in preparation for the progress next year.
I like that. Honestly, I mean, the whole point of this, right, not the whole point, but one of the main points here was, you know, plant medicine, you know, natural alternatives to synthetic drugs, right? And suddenly we're you know, kind of walking backwards, right? It's definitely two steps forward and one step backward here. Don't get me wrong, but.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, I would suspect that people are drawing a line with also the DEA trying to interfere with Georgia pharmacies and just seeing like the DEA getting a little aggressive. The whole Georgia thing, I've always kind of questioned how the pharmacies would function anyway, because again, it is, they do have federal regulation. How are they going to start accounting for 280E? All of these things, you know, what's going to happen to their insurance coverages, their banking relationships, because now they're cannabis retailers in a sense. I'm not justifying the DEA. It seems and feels like an overreach for, you know, states. Just makes me that much more bullish.
But it's understandable, right? Like pharmacies are registered with the DEA, right? This is the only case where cannabis is sold through DEA registered entities. And in my opinion, of course, you know, that is the ideal scenario, right? Dispensing medical cannabis at pharmacies, which are, you know, have oversight. But it is understandable. I don't know if it's an overreach. I don't know. Just like playing a little bit of the devil's advocate here.
Yeah, no, it's easily, you know, can be justified. I just hope the response with it is when we get Schedule 3, how will they then treat it? Because it's still going to be federally illegal. Are they then going to feel okay with it or not?
And does it feel like we're putting the cart before the horse a little bit here? Like, I know cannabis has medical benefits, but you know, I mean, I feel like we need a lot more R&D. On some of this, you know, a lot more medicinal processes to be taken before pharmacies even engage in the manner we're talking about.
You know, this is where I think things get really interesting on the backside of Schedule 3 is adult use is wellness and let it go off on that path, and medical can truly go that path. And, you know, there are some, you don't have to go all the way through an FDA process, depending on, you know, what kind of finished form factor you're trying to accomplish. But I just think there's a lot of developments on the medical side. But, you know, from our perspective, adult use, the wellness side of things is where the vast majority of the growth is. Look at New Jersey's numbers just came out, I think also again on Benzinga. You know, adult use is where the growth is. Medical markets always taper down with adult use added in. And again, because there's no differentiation, where I think on the backside of this, we could see some real differentiation, and that would be great for consumers and you know, the medical community at large.
Amen. You know, just curious, as you're looking at capital markets right now, not to completely derail this, Javi, if you have another question, but investor education, you know, I feel like the investors in this space right now are savvy, you know, have been around the block. And, you know, it's always nerve-wracking going into the end of the year again with nothing happening. But we, you know, if you're paying attention, which a lot of the people still in it are, you know, it was always hard-pressed for anything to happen this year. You know, so I wonder if this December rally continues in the way, what was it, Water Tower, I think, put out a note recently saying just that, is that there is hope that we may actually end in the green as opposed to the red.
Yep. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how this, how these next couple weeks go, because like I said, the volume is already tapering. The nice thing that we have this year that we haven't had in a while is the lack of tax loss selling pressure. You know, for the last couple of years, I mean, I know there's names that are down this year, so people might sell those names, but, you know, good names like GTI, they're up, you know, where's GTI? It's still up almost 30 on the year. So nice to not have that pressure. I know people are fearing potential redemptions that may force selling in an illiquid market, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's plenty of reasons for people to have some year-end negativity, but that is such a short-termism kind of view when we're talking about potentially the biggest change our industry's ever seen in just a couple months. So, you know, if you're going to get tied up over a couple weeks versus, you know, the backside of that, I mean, that's just a different strategy. I'm an investor. I'm not a day trader. I don't. Mm-hmm. So like a couple of weeks to me is just a meaningless amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, this is not a great industry to be a day trader, to be honest. Right. I was recently looking at one of Benzinga's products, you know, where we select stocks and we were trying to define it. And it's like, yeah, it's more like swing trading or long-term, right? There's day trading is almost like crypto, right? In a sense. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that sentiment, right? And as it relates to the volatility, unpredictability, the more of a sentimental, if you will, fashion in which cannabis stocks move on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm terrible at short-term calls, so. you know, but it's even long term, it's hard for some of these things to truly play through. You know, Emily and I were just talking about this the other day, where we remember in the early years having to defend GTI against MedMen. Our investors were like, why didn't you invest in MedMen? You chose GTI. And we're like, well, a quality business and a quality team versus a burning, arguably dumpster fire heading in a horrible direction. And
with a lot of hype. with commercials.
But it took years. It took years for people to finally be like, oh, okay. Years. I mean, that's a long time. That's a lot of patience, right? And I feel like we've been tested again this year with that, where there's been, you know, good companies were overcrowded by, you know, lousy companies that were propped up, to your point, by a lot of trading activity. And, you know, these things just take a long time to play out. And that's why I think, you know, trading is, kudos to those that do it and have fun with it. It's just, I just like to find good quality businesses that I think are good for the next 5-10 years.
As a publication that speaks directly to retail investors and many times day traders, I'm not sure fun is the right word. but maybe, I mean, maybe.
Some people consider gambling fun, right? And even if they go to Vegas and lose $1,000, they were like, what a fun night. There's like that Simpsons famous
it's true.
Skit where Bart finds $100 and imagines going to Vegas and goes like $100 to red and go like black wins. Oh, cool. And he just leaves happy because he got the bet.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. We are all gamblers here, especially in cannabis. All that said, I have two wrap-up questions here for you, Morgan, as we finish this off for the year, my friend. First off, we're going to start in next year. Give us, yep, it's happening. You knew it was coming. Give us your crystal ball. Give us a little sense of how next year, at least potentially, maybe probably, has the chance to develop.
Yeah, well, I think, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due. Jeff Schultz and I were talking about the rescheduling at Benzinga, actually, conference. And he was the one that said, hey, I think the announcement's going to come on 420. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, so agree. you're not going to waste the biggest holiday of our industry to make a historic announcement. So this is, I think this is when the DEA will probably make their announcement. I know people were like, oh, the 90-day thing. I'm like, it's politics. We're going into an election year. They're absolutely going to harvest every ounce of this that they can. So that's what my call is. 420 is when the DEA will come out. Yes.
All right.
And so I think next year is probably going to be the most exciting year ever. And that'll be our 11th year of investing in cannabis because it just changes the game. These companies all of a sudden have more pathways that they can do things with capital that they haven't been able to do before because it's all been sucked away to taxes. I think so many people have been waiting to get into this industry from an investment perspective, so much institutional capital. S3 is enough for them. So I'm excited about it. And that's why, again, like, I don't care about a couple weeks. You know, I think this is, you know, it's obviously painful to watch the stocks just getting creamed again, but you know, when they could just go up so much, so much. So if we're starting from a lower price, that's even more that they're going to go up when this all happens. So I think there's liquidity is going to come back to the space after many years of a drought. That's going to light up a lot of interest. I think there's gonna be a lot of companies that are going to struggle. It's not going to be easy for them to manage through this. There's going to be a lot of dilution. There's going to be defaults. I'm not saying that it's all roses, but I think good ones, there's going to be some really exciting things that are going to happen. So,
amen. I'm full agreement. Yeah. Yeah. And so is Brian in the chat.
Yeah, I saw that. So yes. After seeing so much progress that these companies have made fundamentally, you know, the good ones are going to do great regardless of when the scheduling announcement happens. They're going to do great and they're just going to do that much better. And they're going to be acquisitive, you know, growth is going to pick up. I think people have just underwritten this sector to being almost a no growth sector. What happens when we start seeing double digit growths with free cash flow? You know, the valuations of these things will just look vastly different than today.
And then last question for me, what is Topps and Morgan Paxia's holiday gift guide? What cannabis are you giving your family this year? We're just going to pretend like you're giving your family cannabis.
Well, I'm going to do a little bit of like the Thanksgiving, like shopping bag of check out the beverage category again. You know, it's a nice thing to sit down and share. We're actually getting a house with the siblings and significant others. And so we're going to all be together. And so maybe we'll check out some.
Hold up. You have a sibling?
There's actually two.
There's two more Paxias? I was joking about the one.
There's a mystery sibling. There's a Maggie you haven't heard about yet.
Yes. Maggie's working behind the scenes. We don't even know what Maggie's doing. She moves in silence.
They're both kind of a big deal. I'm in the shadow. But.
Beverage category. I dig it. All right, Morgan, that's all we got time for today, my friend. Been an absolute pleasure to do this with you this year. Thank you for your insights. We're going to expand this next year. We got to. Really appreciate you. Have a great, great holiday season, my friend.
Thank you. You too.
Talk soon.
See you.
All right, guys, come on. Give it up for Morgan if you enjoyed his insights throughout the year. Really appreciate all he's done for us and bringing us his thought leadership. That said, Javi, any last thoughts before we get some other cool thought leaders in the space up?
No. Let's keep it clipping. We have super guests today.
El Guapo, hold on. Best cannabis products for grandkids?
Grandkids over 18. 21 in America, actually.
Oh, is that what you meant? Guapo? Yep. Is that what you meant? All right, keep it going, Javier. Keep it going.
As what's up? Who do we have next, Mr. Lane?
Will Bowden, Grasshopper Farms, head honcho over there. Let's bring him on over. Will, long time no see, my friend. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. Doing great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, glad to have you. Are we looking at you and your farm behind you?
Yeah, it does look a little bit different right now. This was taken right before harvest, obviously, but now everything has been harvested and there's a blanket of snow out there. But this is Michigan farm, yes.
It actually, there was an article recently on a Michigan site. I think it was M Live that said, like, the title was something like, it looks like a Christmas tree farm, but it's actually a weed farm. Which
that's
I thought
right, Javier. That was us.
Headline. I was kind of jealous. What's the secret to growing huge cannabis trees?
Well, I've actually call it manageable because trees in that sense, because you can grow them even bigger. There's great pictures out there where people just grow these giant redwood type trees. But for us, when we were coming to the market, the business opportunity that we saw is that the market was missing a premium quality outdoor flower. And so that's what it is that we set out in the market to grow. We know it can be done. It's been done for a long, long time. There's just not a lot of people doing it right now. So when it came to the outdoor farm for us, part of the reason for the symmetry and the looking at the trees is that we take very, very good care of our plants because they're not being grown for biomass. They're being grown for premium smokable flower. So that's kind of part of the rationale, I think, on why it looks like that Christmas tree farm and why they're looking so big.
That's awesome. You know, let's expand our horizons. We can come back to quality and growth and yield, because I think you're probably the coolest guest we've had on for that discussion. But I do want to chat a little bit more broadly about Michigan. I'm not sure if you were on earlier, but Michigan takes the winner, surprise winner, for the top 10 best states for cannabis businesses ranked by legal experts. From Thompson Coburn, the firm, the biggest surprise was Michigan, which took the top spot. Its success is fueled by low taxes and low barriers for entry at the state level. Michigan recovered significantly from a strenuous few years. Does that ring true to you? And how did it recover? Tell us a little bit about, you know, operating in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. And the nice thing is I can compare it to the process in Colorado and New Jersey, where we also are as well. So from a regulatory perspective, I think one of the things we have to look at as business owners or aspiring business licensees is what is the business landscape from a regulatory perspective, and is it conducive for business? So I do find that as long as you're organized and you can follow a process, Michigan's process is pretty clear and people should be able to navigate through it at the state level. And then you, of course, you have to work through the local level as well. For Michigan, that does mean the local municipality. So it might be a township, it might be a city, but you've got to go through both those. And then I think the other thing too is that Michigan took a couple of years to go through a learning mode before they switched into an enforce mode. And I think they did a really good job of that learn mode of getting out there and really observing what works for operators, what doesn't work for them, where is the market being penetrated by maybe black market supply as well. And then when it went to enforce mode, it kind of started to remove some of the bad actors in the space and then made it even better, I think, for the folks who are operating in a compliant and safe way as well.
You know, staying on the topic of Michigan, it's one of the states that went heavy on indoor growing, but also one of the states that at the same time has a lot of outdoor cultivation, which is pretty rare, other than maybe like in California or Oregon. And in America, outdoor is not particularly, sought after. I am an outdoor guy versus indoor. But like, can you explain the rationale behind growing outdoors, right? And what do you say to people who go like, you know, all good with organic and sun grown and whatever, but you know, like indoor is where it's at.
Yeah. So maybe I start by saying that I think that when we talk about quality and the type of flower that we're producing, it should be less about where was it grown and it should be more about what did you grow, right? And so then it really falls back on what are the techniques that people are using. Now, so Will's thoughts here, when this became illegal, a lot of people went into basements and pole barns, right? And then, so it wasn't just decades, it was just generations, 3 and 4 generations where people became very, very good at indoor growing, which is different than outdoor farming, right? So I think that part of the confusion here is that you have these really good indoor growers that when they got the opportunity to go outside and really stretch and be able to grow more, they were applying indoor grow technique to outdoor farming arenas. Mm-hmm. And so that confusion right there started to produce a sub-quality product. And so I think people kind of went back inside, started discounting some flower, and then really shifting over to biomass. Is that now? I think what's going to happen here is that in the United States market, we haven't realized the ratio yet of indoor greenhouse and outdoor, and what that ratio, that natural ratio, needs to be today and going forward. And it's going to be part of that evolving landscape that we'll all figure out together as we go forward. So we're going to need good actors in all three of those spaces, and then really get back to that education of it's not so much where did you grow it, it's what did you grow.
Mm. Agreed.
What a change in concept. I feel like from what the industry unifies their voice on communications and PR standpoint. Now that's really interesting,
but,
Will.
But I get where it came from, Elliot, right? So like when people did go outside and they were growing what a lot of people would just refer to as crappy outdoor weed. And the reason why was simply because, again, that growing technique wasn't perfected in the way that they were doing it inside, right? So the outdoor grow, I think, got a bad name for itself. And then like outside of places like the Emerald Triangle and other places where it's known for being grown outside. So, but when people come outside and they do grow it, here's one of the things that we test it. So this is, we've just had our third harvest. We pretty much sell out almost on demand. Because we have a good outdoor product, people do like it. So we tested it in a market that's a hard market. Michigan is a long standing legacy market, right? So if there's a place where we're going to see if we can actually prove our hypothesis, this is one of them, and we absolutely did it. So I think as people become more familiar with the outdoor growing opportunity, and they educate themselves and bring in the experience of how to do it, which, by the way, is two parts. It's not just growing cannabis, it's growing cannabis at that location too. Farming here at this location is different than doing it in New Jersey, different than doing it in Colorado, right? So there's kind of two aspects to that as well.
You know, well, you operate in states that have taken different approaches in terms of how limited and unlimited they can be, looking specifically at New Jersey versus Colorado and or Michigan, right? You know, Michigan in this ranking, that, you know, was lauded for their access. New Jersey a little bit more limited in terms of the value of that market. So you work alongside both larger companies, MSOs, you know, and multi-state brands. And you work alongside smaller companies, retailers. So you probably have a broad perspective of this. But when it comes to specialties, you know, and how this industry advances, nobody's talking about interstate commerce anymore. It is what it is. Some of these markets force people to be vertically integrated. But do you feel that you specializing in cultivation gives you a leg up for participation in all markets and certain markets? Just tell me a little bit about where you feel cultivators sit in the industry right now.
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. So first of all, if you're going to jump in and be a cultivator, or this might also apply to being a manufacturer, you really have to think about, are you a supplier or are you a brand? Because if you're a white label supplier, what's going to happen 10 years down the road when you've got some bigger companies out there that are going to be able to outproduce you at cheaper rates at the same quality, we'll just say, right? So what we've done, I think, is it's kind of akin to the Sam Adams model, right? So early Sam Adams days, right? So we're a supplier of flower. By virtue of that, we also make pre-rolls, and by virtue of that, we have biomass. So those are the three things, but our focus was on premium outdoor flower. And so that's because of that focus, we were able to execute against a business plan and fulfill a need that consumers said that they desired to have, which was, I want a choice when I go into a dispensary of indoor and outdoor, and I want to have a choice of different grades of outdoor flower, not just one, right? Mm-hmm. So as we explored that opportunity then we have to say, okay, so who are we in this greater market space, right? Like you're saying, Elliot, so we're staying at a craft level, which for me means that we're going to stay below 5% of that particular market's demand. So we're very clear on what we're trying to do. And we're also very clear on what we're not trying to do. We're not trying to be all things to all people, and we're not trying to take over the whole state. So by sitting with that, I think if we go into that Sam Adams model, it's that then we have to develop a very, very good relationship with retailers and consumers, right? And if we have a very good relationship with retailers and consumers from a brand perspective, and then we maintain quality and consistency with what we're trying to do, I think that will then help us to remain relevant, have an identity, and also protect us as more people come into the space and explore on what they want to do, whether it's in one state, multiple states. Where it gets interesting is when you go into a state that is forced vertical, right? So like a Florida. And so I think in there, a company like ours needs to remain flexible to say, well, how would you implement something like a vertical in a state like that? Well, for me, I look at it like a vineyard bottle. Okay, great. You can still have the farm. You can still have the outdoor flower. And then you can have the vineyard shop where somebody comes through and they get educated. I think education is one of our number one responsibilities in this industry. Then they get a tour. They get to then go through the retail aspect of that particular farm and buy a hat, a t-shirt, and some flower to go, you know? So I think there's ways to still remain with our core identity and core competency, but then still be able to operate in a place like a Florida example.
One follow-up there, Javi, real quick, before I think Javier has one more question to wrap us up here. When it comes to cannabis's future in versus standardized, normalized, and accepted agriculture, do you think cannabis reaches commodity status in the eyes of investors in the near future?
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. It's just the timing on it, right? So when I was listening to Morgan talk and you guys were talking with him, I think that there's we just have to be prepared for there's a few eventualities that'll happen. So in the same sense that you just said being commoditized, I think anybody making a consumable product should be preparing for themselves for GMP, GMP certifications as well, right? And if you're not preparing for that today, then you're misjudging the future. You're gonna have to conform to some sort of a process that says you run a good business that makes a consumable product that's safe for consumers out there, right? So I think that we have to prepare for those things, whether it's those certifications or being commoditized. The timing on it will really be the more questionable thing on how long it'll take to get there.
You know, and to close it up, we're a little bit over time, but if there's one concept that I love, and it's what do you call it? Decentralized MSO. Can you explain that concept and the why behind it in under 1 minute?
Yeah, definitely. So the decentralized MSO model for me means that we're going to be building out probably 10 states, and the farms will be built in a way where they support each other. So we're not going to have a time when we at the leadership level say, hey, everybody, we just got a smoking deal on nutrients, so everybody start using these nutrients. I believe because we're trying to do this with this flower that we need to leave the decision-making rights at the farm level. And then what you'll do is you'll have like roles who are constantly meeting on a regular basis to support each other through things that can be done at all farm locations. And for the things that can't be, they're still supporting each other on how they get it done at that state level.
I love it. And it you know, goes completely in line with what you were saying earlier about, you know, growing cannabis in different states is very different. Every location is different, and growing outdoors, you can control all the variables just like you do on indoor cultivation. So very excited to see, grasshoppers grow to 10 states.
Yeah.
Maybe like this time next year.
Amen. Well, it's exciting what you're growing, man. It's really nice to have a cultivator on this show and give us a little backbone of the industry discussion. So thank you for being here. Lots more discussion to come. I believe you are going to be with us in Florida in April. Very excited to continue the conversation there, but keep an eye on it. Grasshopper Farms, Will Bowden, thanks for being here.
Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you. All right, Javier, that was awesome, man. We need more growers on this show.
Yeah, we will have a lot more growers next year, man.
Yeah, I dig it. So Guap, Keith, Brian, everybody stick around. We are not done yet. We have an awesome other side of the industry. We're going to talk about consuming cannabis now. Javier, who's next, man?
Wait, so we got Zechariah from Puffsy.
Puffsy, that's a great name.
I didn't even try the last name. I was like, you know.
Yeah, we'll let him introduce himself. Let's go. Aaron Thomas, let's bring over Zechariah. Welcome, 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 Zechariah. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good. How are you all? Javi, it's Corchamelia.
There you go.
Corchamelia.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, I was going by heart and like didn't even have my notes in front of me. And it was like, I'm not even going to try.
Yeah,
but
right.
Zeccheria Corchimiglia.
Correct. You got it, man.
Oh, that was
sexy. Italiano.
Yeah, Italiano. Exactly. Sicilian. Yep, exactly. Hey, Ollie, it's good seeing you again, man.
Yeah, my wife is Sicilian. Not, in, hey, you know, maybe best, a couple man. Of degrees. Move.
We're the best, man. I love that. I love that Louisville sign behind you, Elliot. I know we talked about that in Chicago earlier this year. It, so yeah, go Cards.
Yeah, man.
S-ball team's not looking too good right now.
No, we don't talk about that. We talk about women's basketball though. They're killer.
Yeah, they're doing good.
You guys ever want to have a sports podcast? I am here for it. But Zechariah, good to have you on, man.
Yeah,
you
know, appreciate.
I mean, Aaron Thomas, can you bring up please the website? Let's look at your product while we're talking about it. Cause I mean, you're doing something super unique,
can't
super different. You're,
definitely.
You have a glass pipe here, recycled glass. And then to consume, you have pods.
Correct. Yeah. And I actually have a pod right here for just to show the guests and viewing. So this is a 0.5 gram pod. So, you know, any processor brand that wants to go into our technology, we basically have our filling machine. They fill with 0.5 gram. You can do them infused and they go out the door. And we actually have bong attachments as well. I can kind of bring that up here. Simply fits a 14 millimeter standard bong. You put your pod in, rip off that lidding foil, consume, toss in the recycle bin, and you're ready for your next sesh.
Yeah. I love the look. It's a beautiful pipe. It's a beautiful. I really feel like there's a premium aspect.
Definitely. Yeah, that's what we're going for with this product. You know, years of being in the packaging space, we kind of wanted that elevated kind of experience to bring to the cannabis space. So I think we hit the mark.
Talk to us a little bit about the quality of the weed, right? You know, how you keep it fresh, you know, in these pods, like, you know, you just give us a little sense of, you know, how you make that, beautiful for the consumer.
Sure. Yeah, sure, Elliot. So when I started this business, we were actually going to be the Puffsy business, right? So we were going to use other growers' cannabis, put it into our pods and sell it as the Puffsy brand. Earlier on this year, we brought in a strategic kind of CFO for us. You probably know Keurig. Elliot, I believe you met Peter up in Chicago. He is the founder of Keurig, and we actually kind of changed our business model to kind of reflect what Keurig did to the coffee space, right? So we are viewed as a hardware company that is another ancillary product for all the brands and processors in this space. So we aren't dictating kind of what retail packaging these brands are going into the retail space, right? So we have our standard kind of eighth packaging where 7 pods come in here. And, you know, that's an eighth at the consumer level. But we're launching with a couple of new brands in Nevada come the new year. And they're really targeting the consumption lounges, right? So we have part of our machine on the back end now. We have a flow wrapping that keeps everything nice and fresh, individually wrapped. And they're going into the consumption lounge space.
Yeah, actually, that's pretty cool. I can see a very near future where you can get a variety pack.
Yep, right? For
like,
sure.
You know, you got 7 different strains in there.
Yeah.
Or like something for a day out camping, like in half grams, you know, it's like, here's to start the morning, here's after lunch, here's a while after. This is for bed, right?
Yeah, for sure, Javi. And what's great about the Puffsy kind of brand or what the hardware product brings to the brands is all the ancillary items that they can create through it. So we're working with a brand right now that's coming out with a travel case, Javi. Like you said, they're really focused on nature and, you know, climbing and being outdoors. Nice. Put 3 pods in there, you put your pipe in there, and it's a nice zipper case, right? Little travel case, you got your 3 pods ready to go.
Can you talk to us a little bit about, as much as you can or want to,
sure.
Talk to us a little bit about performance and success of the brand thus far. Obviously, you're in hyper growth mode, it seems. So maybe preliminary, but would love to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah, so we are in, I forget how many retailers in California. We have a team that's out on the West Coast launching in Nevada. We've already have a brand in Nevada in the Las Vegas market. Consumers love it, right? So it's easy, it's ready to go. And when they see one of their favorite brands in this kind of hardware, they're jumping right on it, right? So one of the biggest aspects of why I created this company was people love smoking glass, right? Bongs, pipes, cannabis and glass kind of go hand in hand, right? So, and what does a bong smoker do after every session? The heavy users clean them, right? And that can be a pain. So that's kind of why we created it. And now with this is basically an ash catcher really, right? So that fits anything. It keeps your bong clean 10, 12 times, you know, longer at many sessions over the typical, right? Just packing your own. So the consumers love it. We actually had some big news coming out of Benzinga when we were up there in September. I can't really comment on that, Elliot, but we're going to expand fairly quickly here come the new year.
You just have to break it with us, man. Exclusive to Benzinga. Yeah. That's all we ask.
Yeah. Maybe offline.
You got to peel it with us.
Pop hey.
It. That's the word you use. Pop it, right?
Yeah. We're plugging it.
What is, will these pods ever be, you know, like self-fillable, right? That is like my main issue with any kind of pod, right? It's like, well, if they don't sell it near me, then I'm screwed. I got a pipe. Like, is there a future where I can get these pods and fill them with my own flower?
Yeah, right. So part of our business model, Javi, is going to be placing unfilled pods, like a 10-pack, in the dispensary level, at the retail level. Yep. So if so-and-so, you can buy them at your typical gas station, something like that, right? As we expand, definitely that's in the works, right? So 10 unfilled pods, you fill them yourself, and then you toss them in the recycle bin, as opposed to going to dispensary and picking up filled pods with your favorite brand in them.
Perfect. And you lit my mind. That was the other one. You toss them in the recycle bin, right?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
I am anti-pods unless
they're
recyclable or compostable.
Yeah.
What is the situation here?
Yeah, they're 100% recyclable. Glass is infinitely recyclable. This can go into the recycle stream and 100% be recycled. With a lot of the plastics and the pods, let's think Keurig, you know, they're trying to spin that like the, hey, we don't have waste, we're trying to be zero. Those K-Cups will never be recycled. They just never will. There's a filter in them, there's ground coffee, everything. So this will get washed, ground up, and turned into glass again. Hopefully more pods.
Yeah, Zechariah, a couple questions about the market for where you were operating. Uh-huh. As we close up here, I'm curious, the paraphernalia consumption market, pipes, you know, bongs, right? I mean, is there an understanding of how saturated or unsaturated that is, the demand from consumers as to what brands they want to use? Do you have insight into, you know, who the leading pipe manufacturer is outside of, you know, Puffco and Puffsy and you know, a few of the other brand names we know in the, you know, legal marijuana side?
Yeah. So, you know, glass blowing and making these bongs, right, it's artistic, right? So there's consumers that will pay $1,000 for a bong that is blown by their favorite artist, right? Something like that. What we're seeing is that some of these legacy flower companies or flower brands, their users are flower consumers, right? So they're not going to dabble in the vapes. They're not going to dabble in the edibles. They smoke flower, right? And those are the consumers that Puffsy is attracting. The people that want to smoke their bong, and that's their consumption method. When we created this business, we looked at, you know, the vertical that was still the largest, and that's flower. And, you know, you see pre-rolls taking off. Well, not everyone likes smoking a joint, right? They like being on their couch and smoking their bong and watching their TV, their sports games, right? And that's kind of the clientele that we're going after.
Okay. And then when it comes to your biggest competitor, right? Mm-hmm. Is it kind of like the agnostic glass blowing pipes that end up in smoke shops and other dispensaries, or do you and Puffco have an actual firm grasp?
Yeah, what I think, Elliot, is our main competitors are people that are still consuming flower. You know, they're not moving to the vapes or the edibles, but their tendency is to pick up pre-rolls at the dispensary level.
Interesting. So
that's where we want to grab share. The people that smoke the pre-rolls, that's where we want them to come to.
It's exactly the same concept. That's why I was asking about the refillable, right? Like, there's some people who buy the pre-roll, but there's people who want to buy the rolling papers.
Like, sure. Yep. Or the cones.
Yep. I want the rolling papers. I want the pod, right? Mm-hmm. I want to get the Puffsy, grab it in America whenever I'm there, bring it back to Argentina, fill it with my own weed,
yep,
and impress all my friends.
Yep, for sure.
It's interesting, though. I feel like we're talking in a manner of competing with plant-touching companies, in a sense, as opposed to competing with paraphernalia brands. And I think there are two different markets that you are essentially trying to win, and mm-hmm. it's an interesting business model.
Yeah. Yeah, right, Elliot. So we don't view the flower companies as a competitor, right? What we want to do is service those flower companies to give them another opportunity to sell their flower in a new kind of hardware technology. What's great about what we're finding with the brands that are already using our technology, our hardware, is that they can have the same percentage THC on their labels, on their packaging, but they're using the smalls or the popcorn of the flower, right? But it's still testing. It's still high quality. It just doesn't show as well on the retail shelves as a plus, right? So that's where they're seeing the advantage, where mm-hmm. they can put that the smalls into this technology and still get a premium price for that. So for cultivators, it makes a lot of sense.
Awesome. Zachary, I think we're up against time here, my friend.
Yeah, but sure,
it's
man.
It's been interesting. It's a super interesting brand, what you're doing. And
appreciate it.
I look forward to seeing you guys thrive. And honestly, the Keurig ancillary mix of product here, it'll be really interesting to see, you know, consumer growth and demand.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, your last guest, we talked about the commoditization of this business, right? And that's kind of where we see it going as well. The consumers want quick, you know, easy to use products, right? So.
Absolutely. Javi, you have anything else, man?
No, and just like a yes, no question real fast.
Sure.
El Guapo Tron. Does an unopened pot smell at all? From 0 to 100, 0 being zero smell, 100 being it stinks.
About 5, I would say, Javi.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Zachariah Carchamilia. Did I do it?
Got it.
Yep. All right. It. Zachariah, awesome. Thanks for being here, brother. Really appreciate you going through the product.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, guys. I enjoyed our time together. We'll talk soon, okay?
Awesome, my friend. Talk soon.
See you guys.
All right. He's stealthy indeed. Javier, interesting show today, man. We covered a lot of topics. We covered outdoor cultivation versus indoor. What are you growing versus you know, versus indoor versus outdoor. We covered capital markets with Morgan. We got a really nice look into kind of a paraphernalia show, and flower conversation there. So, Javi, full-on show today, man.
Love it. BZCannabis.com. Come join us in Florida, Hollywood, April 16th and 17th. For a revamped, reinvented, you know, whatever, recharged, supercharged Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference.
If you're in California, we'll be there February 22nd for a one-day cannabis event. Keep an eye out for that as well. Until next time, y'all, we'll see you Thursday, last show of the year. Peace. Peace.